The Forsyte Chronicles by John Galsworthy. Dramatized by Elspeth Sands. With Dirk Bogarde as Galsworthy, Alan Howard as Soames, Amanda Redman as Fur, and Gary Bond as Michael Mont. Episode 13.
My dear Francis, I'm so sorry you had to run away. I wanted to thank you for standing up for me last night. Marjorie Farrar is just about the limit.
It was the evening after Fleur's disastrous salon. Unaware of her father's abrupt departure from the house, Fleur had decided to take action herself to try and repair the damage done.
If only Dad had kept quiet. We all talk behind people's backs. What does it matter? Mrs. Ralph Pinrin. The thing was nothing so long as it wasn't public. Everything now that it is.
Standing at the window of her elegant boudoir, Fleur saw in the light of a street lamp two cats, their heads turned gracefully towards each other.
How to live in society. That's the thing. Impossible to be good. Impossible to be happy. Yet anything else would seem so dull.
At about the same time, in the lounge of the Cosmopolis Hotel, a young man sat down to watch the afternoon's dancing. His mood was distracted.
Get away. That's the thing. Paris, France. I owe that much to Fleur for her kindness.
How do you do, Mr. Wilmot?
Miss Farrar. Well, I was just... pardon me, won't you sit down?
So, you thought me a traitress, did you?
I did.
Why?
Because I heard you call your hostess a snob.
My dear young man, if one never called one's friends anything worse. Do you dance?
Yes, indeed. But I wouldn't presume to dance with you.
But you must.
Red gold hair, blue eyes sparkling with defiance. White neck, fragrant as a pine wood in sunshine. Frances Wilmot was bewitched.
You dance better than an Englishman.
I'm proud to hear you say so, ma'am. You dance superbly.
Do you always call women ma'am? It's ever so pretty.
Would you rather I called you something else?
Come and have tea with me tomorrow.
I have to be in Paris.
I won't hurt you. In fact, I'd like to paint you. Would you allow me to do that? You have a quality, a freshness one doesn't often see in society.
I would be honored, ma'am. I know where you live. I was standing outside your place at 4 o'clock this morning.
Mr. Soames Forsyte. How can I help you?
You are the editor?
One of them. Take a seat.
I've come about this paragraph in your issue of last Tuesday.
Ah, the Chiff Chaff column. Yes, what's the problem?
Would you kindly tell me who wrote it?
We never disclose the names of our correspondents.
Well, as a matter of fact, I know.
Then why did you ask?
The couple referred to are quite clearly my daughter, Mrs. Michael Mont, and her husband.
Indeed.
If your correspondent thinks she can vent her spleen in print with impunity...
Aren't you being rather thin-skinned? This seems to me perfectly innocuous, as gossip goes.
I happen to know your correspondent is actuated by malevolence.
Oh, really? I wouldn't have judged that. Perhaps you should have a word with your son-in-law. People in politics aren't exactly mealy-mouthed.
Francis, how nice. You're not in Paris. Would you like some tea?
I've had it. I had it with her.
Oh. How interesting. Where did she pick you up?
She was at the Tay Danson at my hotel yesterday. She's a wonderful dancer. She's a wonderful person altogether.
You seem to have changed your mind since Wednesday.
I received your letter. I'd like you to tell me what you mean by calling Miss Farrar the limit.
And I'd like you to tell me why this volte-face.
I want you to be friends with her again. I'm sure she didn't mean what she said.
Did she tell you that?
Not exactly.
You know, Francis, you look as if you have French blood in you. Have you?
Well, my grandmother was of French stock.
Then you must know the French don't forgive easily.
Fleet Street? I'm sure I don't know. I only ever read the Times.
Well, it was quite a pasting. What puzzles me is why the Evening Sun should have taken up the cudgels. They've shown no interest in foggetism before.
I think you should drop it, Michael. If you're going to be called a cheap Jack gerrymander...
Well, I'm not the only supporter of foggetism, Ducky.
This kind of thing, innuendo, didn't happen in my day.
I don't suppose, sir, that you've been talking to the Evening Sun, have you?
Can't tell a lie. It's not English.
Well, I let them know I knew who'd written that paragraph. Yes?
I did warn you, sir. They always get back at you. The press is a sensitive plant.
Live dangerously. Why not? It's my motto. Be the perfect wife of one man, the perfect mistress of another.
Marjorie Farrar, admiring herself in the mirror, was thinking of Francis, whose portrait she'd just begun.
Marjorie. Oh, Marjorie.
He's a baby, but so charming, so old-fashioned.
And she was thinking of the man whom she had promised, more or less, to marry.
Sir Alexander McGowan, Member of Parliament, with a fortune in jute. Useful, that, now that Father's withdrawn my allowance.
My dear Marjorie, why come to me? You have the means of restitution in your own hands. Those letters of Fleur's are nothing if not libelous. You should get swinging damages.
Poor Father. He's as badly dipped as I am. But to go so far, risk ending up in court... Mind you, save me the trouble of marrying for money.
Marjorie, you look splendid. I've been thinking. We've got to make our engagement public. The whole of London's talking. If I'm to help you...
Oh, no, my dear. You're on probation still.
Oh.
Besides, you know I don't care a tuppenny ice what people say about me.
Oh, well, I do. And I'm going to face that fellow for sight.
You'll do nothing of the kind, Alec. If it's an apology you're after, Father's already tried. No dice, I'm afraid.
I'll break every bone in his body.
He's nearly 70 years old.
He's Michael Mont's father-in-law, isn't he? That fellow with a bee in his bonnet about foggetism. I'd like to break them both.
That won't be necessary. I'm going to take my father's advice. You've made my mind up for me.
So, Miss Farrar, Sir Alexander has explained the circumstances to me.
Mr. Settlewhite of Settlewhite and Stark examined his new client with frank interest. He knew her reputation. He made it his business to know such things. She was what was known in the modern jargon as a fast young woman.
I take it you would be content with an apology and as much as you can get by way of damages?
The more the better.
Are you hard up?
Couldn't very well be harder.
You don't want it to come to court?
No. Though I suppose it might be rather fun.
That depends on how many skeletons you have in your cupboard.
He's a dry old stick. I'll wager he believes I've done it all.
Why did Mr. Forsyte call you a traitress?
Because he thought I was insulting his daughter, I suppose.
And were you?
I may have said she was fond of lions.
Is there someone who can confirm your statement?
My companion, Mr. Quincy. He's in my pocket.
Did anyone else overhear you?
An American, but he won't say so.
An admirer?
No. A bird of passage. Mm-hmm. He's going back to America.
It's a curious case, Miss Ferrar. Insubstantial, one might say. But I'm inclined to overlook that. You have a number of advantages. You're the granddaughter of a marquis. You're, forgive my plain speaking, a fine-looking young woman. So long as there are no skeletons.
None that'll trouble us. Mm.
Then my mind's settled. We'll serve Mr. Forsyte and see how the cat jumps.
The devil!
What is it, Holmes?
That baggage Marjorie Ferrar demands a formal apology.
You won't give it, naturellement.
Failing which, action will be taken.
Oh, really, Holmes, you're so English. It's for that Ferrar woman to apologize to us. Come here, Tinker.
There's a young man here to see you, dear. He's from the dressmaker. Mrs. Michael Mont.
Yes?
I'm from Settlewhite and Stark. A matter of a suit.
Settlewhite and Stark? Well, they're not my dressmakers.
Not that kind of suit, madam. Libel. Ferrar against Mont. Yes?
Mapledurham 361?
Yes?
I have a trunk call for you from a Mr. Michael Mont in London.
Ah, I see.
Good evening, sir.
Nothing wrong, is there?
I'm afraid so. Fleur's been served with a writ for libel.
Good God!
Not even in his worst moments had Soames imagined Marjorie Ferrar would take things this far.
Is there any substance in the charge?
Fleur wrote a few letters, and it seems she used some rather choice phrases to describe Marjorie Ferrar.
I told you not to let her go about insulting that woman.
Oh, she doesn't consult me every time she writes letters to a friend, sir.
Well, this is a nice pair of shoes.
She won't hear of an apology, like you, sir. In fact, she's spoiling for a fight.
Leave it to me. I'll come up tonight. Has she any evidence to support what she wrote in those letters?
Well, she says...
No, don't tell me over the phone. We'll talk about it at dinner.
A society lawsuit. What could be worse?
Solicitor's divorce. Cousin named as co-respondent. Paper.
Call Philip Bain.
Actions he had brought himself.
The courts exist to penalize those who are in the right.
Well, Father?
You won't eat your words, I suppose.
Do you want me to?
Then we've no alternative but to tell her we'll justify, and that should frighten her into dropping the whole thing. I shall need chapter and verse.
Airing dirty linen in public. I don't like it, sir. It will be as bad for us as for her.
I don't intend it to come to court.
She just wants money out of us. She doesn't care whether people think her moral or not. She despises morality. All her set do.
Her view of morality, I wonder...
By Jove, so you've hit it. If you can get her to admit she's read certain books, seen or acted in certain plays...
Could be our line of attack in the unlikely eventuality of it coming to court.
But surely no one in this day and age...
British jury, my dear, is a very conservative body. Now, get me the names of this young jade set, will you, Michael, and a list of the plays she's appeared in, books she's read, that sort of thing.
Modernity on trial. Well, it's better than dissecting a woman in public.
But I shall need the personal information as well, if I am to frighten her.
You won't use it in court, will you, sir?
But I've already told you, I don't intend it to come to court.
Mr. Michael Mont!
Mr. Speaker... Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, it is with regret that I must point out in this, my maiden speech...
Michael Mont, the newly elected member for Midbuck, was making his maiden address. With Fleur in the ladies' gallery and a packed house waiting for him to fall on his face, he could not afford to falter.
Now, some of you, not many, I fear, will be familiar with a treatise by Sir James Fogart entitled The Parlous State of England. The country is in a crisis. We must look to the men of vision to find a remedy for our ills. Emigration, the land, the empire. These are the cornerstones of a policy which I am convinced one day faith be synonymous with the salvation of our country. Only by embracing progressism, ladies and gentlemen.
Against the tide of his own party, against the tide of the people and the country, Michael set his bark.
Might I remind the House, we are the centre of a great empire. Yes. Yeah. Yet here we are looking to Europe for our salvation. Yeah.
For 15 minutes, Michael spoke. He was listened to, laughed at, derided, and forgotten.
Michael, you did splendidly. Where have you been?
Walking. I didn't stay for the rest of the speeches. Fancied I might be on a bit of a sticky wicket.
Then you didn't hear that beast.
What beast?
Sir Alexander McGowan.
The member for Greengower? What was he snorting about?
He's after you because of Marjorie Farrar.
He's in her camp?
Rumour has it he wants to marry her.
Ah, which puts us in the firing line.
He insinuated you were only pushing Fogartism because you had an interest in the sales of the book.
But I've had nothing to do with Danby and Winter since before I was elected.
Well, the papers don't know that. Neither do most other people. You'll have to write a letter to the Times, Michael, and take it up in the House.
Mr. Michael Mont.
Mr. Speaker, I rise to correct a statement reflecting on my personal honour made in yesterday's debate by the member for Greengower. It's true that I was once a member of the firm which published Sir James Fogart's book, but I retired from that firm in 1923, before I entered this House.
This time, Michael was listened to with rather more attention. A personal scrap was always enlivening, especially when there was a whiff of scandal attached.
Mr. Speaker, I said, and I still say, that the publisher of a book will always be interested in having the judgment which induced him to publish in the first place vindicated by the public.
But it was later, in the marble halls which housed the lavatories, that the nature of the struggle between the two men became clear.
Now, sir, perhaps you'll tell me why you behaved like a dirty dog.
What?
Take that! My hat!
Only when both men had drawn blood, Michael bleeding from the ear, the member for Greengower from the nose, was honour satisfied.
Fogartism reduced to a brawl in a lavatory. Is it possible I've missed my vocation?
Hello, Mott. What's happened to you?
Well, Mott, hello.
That ear doesn't look too dandy.
Oh, it's nothing.
How's Mrs. Mott?
Very well, thanks.
What's the matter with the fellow? Seems quite out of curl.
And you?
Oh, fine. Will you tell her I've had a letter from my cousin John? He sends his love.
Thanks.
You cut your hand, too.
Not my hand, somebody's nose.
Exactly what I wanted to do. All the time. Whose was it?
Chap called McGowan.
Good Lord. Sir Alexander McGowan? The MP?
The same.
It's the very nose. I'm in your debt, Mont. Thanks a lot.
Another in Marjorie Farrar's camp. Poor Fleur. Auprès de ma blonde, il fait beau, c'est beau, c'est vie. Mon pauvre blonde, il fait beau, c'est vie. Where's it all leading? That's what I'd like to know. Fleur, Fogartism, Marjorie Farrar. Shall I give Fleur the message from her cousin John? Is that old business going to haunt us yet?
Michael Mont. I met him on the way here. He'd been in a fight.
Michael?
It was with him. Your friend.
That business in the House. Did Michael have a black eye?
His ear was bloody.
Alec won't come calling today, then.
Which is a relief. If I go on being indebted to him, I shall have to pay.
Marjorie. Marjorie!
My dear child, how primitive you are.
Oh, marry me!
I'm going to marry Alec. I told you. I need his shekels.
You can have mine. You can have everything.
I'm not so far gone as that.
I'm head over ears in love with you.
To be the perfect wife of one man, the perfect mistress of another. Why not, if I keep my head?
I'd like to punch McGowan's nose myself. I can't bear to think of him touching you.
But after all, he's only a child, and one doesn't shock children.
Come, we have work to do. You're here to have your portrait painted, remember?
Half an hour later, they were interrupted by an unexpected visitor.
I see. This is how you amuse yourself, is it?
Our first sitting. Come and look.
No, thanks.
I'll be off then.
Won't you stay for tea?
No, thank you, ma'am.
You said that young blighter was in Paris. Are you playing fast and loose with me, Marjorie?
Of course. Why not?
You'll not see that fellow again. Any fool can see he's in love with you.
Let go!
Not until I have your promise.
I choose my own friends, Alec. You'd better understand that. I've no intention of going into purdah for you.
I'm damned if I'll accept that.
Then our engagement is off.
You're the hardest woman I ever came across. Why I love you, I don't know.
It doesn't improve your temper. Or your looks. What have you done to your nose?
I ran it against the door.
You were rash to come here today.
I can't keep away. And you know it.
The crisis was over. Audrey's head ached, but she had the satisfaction of knowing that she had not betrayed her faith. She let a decent interval elapse and then...
Run along now, Alec, before that nose turns gaudy.
So long as I know you've forgiven me.
But once he'd gone, satisfaction turned to melancholy.
Is it enough to be modern? Should I risk all and marry Francis?
The sand had run out of her dolly. Life was a bore. What she needed was...
Ah, Fanny, bring me the ingredients for an eggnog, will you?
Yes, Miss Farrar.
Plenty of brandy and a dash of nutmeg. Only cure for the hump.
Hello? Butterfield speaking.
I have Mr. Forsyth on the line for you.
Oh, thank you.
Butterfield? It's Forsyth here. Do you remember me?
Yes, indeed, sir.
Can you step round to the Connoisseurs Club sometime this morning? There's a confidential matter I wish to raise with you.
You know this novel, Butterfield?
Soames held out a copy of Percival Calvin's Canthor. It was one of the advanced books on the list Michael had drawn up.
By repute, sir. It's selling for £5 a copy.
I'm not suggesting you read it. I have, and it's my opinion both author and publisher should have been locked up long ago. As I said on the telephone, this matter is confidential.
You can rely on me, sir. I've not forgotten what you did for me.
Yes, well, I want you to buy 10 copies of this novel at my expense and post them to 10 people whose names I'll give you. You can put slips in to say they're complimentary, but no names.
You want the book boomed, sir?
Good God, no. My reasons are quite other.
Oh, I understand, sir.
I doubt that you do. The names I shall give you are all more or less connected with literature. Now, 1 week after you've dispatched the books, I want you to call on one of the people on the list, a woman, and offer to sell her another copy. I want to make quite sure she's received the book and read it. Will you do this for me?
I'll be happy to, sir. Advanced literature seems to be written for ladies nowadays, doesn't it?
A week later, Soames' plans began to bear fruit.
I called on the lady, Mr. Forsyth, as you instructed. She confirmed that she'd read the book.
Highly satisfactory, Forsyth, wouldn't you say? Yes. Letters in all the principal newspapers. 4 of the names on my list of 10 have broken cover. Canthor is literature, and literature has no business with morality. Well, you couldn't ask for a more damning indictment. But if you'll forgive me saying so, what we want is to prevent this case coming to court.
My sentiments exactly.
So, what happens now?
Now, Sir Lawrence, we gather more evidence. That's what happens now. The plain dealer? Is it an advanced play, Michael? It's not on your list.
It's 250 years old.
Aha.
Oh, they were a coarse lot in those days. What role is the Ferrar woman playing?
Olivia.
And this actor-manager, or whatever he calls himself, Bertie Curfew, he's an old flame.
Well, the relationship was widely talked about, yes.
Talked about and sworn in court aren't the same thing, unfortunately.
Oddly enough, I've had a letter from the man's sister, Nora Curfew. She runs a home for children in Bethnal Green. She wants to meet me.
Whatever for?
She read my speech on Fogartism. Seems I wasn't speaking to the deaf after all.
A bleak autumn day. Michael, responding to a letter from Sir James Fogart, had been met at the station by a man in faded green livery driving an ancient tea cart.
My dear sir, the disappointment I have felt since the appearance of my book was somewhat mitigated by your allusions to it in Parliament. I am an old man and do not come to London now, but if you are ever in the neighbourhood...
Not exactly the centre of things, Sir James. I'm the wrong man for the cause. That's the trouble.
His mood was somber. The Marjorie Ferrar business was no nearer a settlement. The attacks on Fogartism daily grew more vociferous. And this morning, in the Post, there'd been a letter from Tony Bickett in Australia.
When they talk about making your fortune out here, all I can say, sir, is tell it to the Marines.
Poor little snipe.
They call us pommies. And treat us as if we'd taken a liberty coming to their blooming country and all.
Oh, let's hope Sir James can cheer me. 84 years old and a visionary.
Perfidious Albion. Have you noticed, Mr. Mont, how we always wait till the last moment to declare our policy? Great mistake. Gives the impression that we serve time. Which, by the by, being a democracy, we generally do.
But can England really stand apart from Europe, Sir James?
Can she stand with it?
I shouldn't have come. The man's like a superannuated British lion. And the price of wheat, Sir James, how would you stabilise that?
A wheat loan, Mr. Mont, and government control. It's a basic case, why not? Every year, the government should buy in advance all the surplus we need and store it. Then we should fix a price with the farmers that gives them a good profit and sell to the public at the average between the two prices. You'd soon see plenty of wheat grown and a general revival of agriculture.
Well, wouldn't it raise the price of bread?
It needn't.
And require an army of officials?
Organize the existing machinery. It's not so difficult.
State trading.
You're against it.
Oh, I fear the country would be.
You mustn't mind what the newspapers say, you know.
Well, if one's a fool, one might as well be a blazing fool. There's a lot of opposition to the child emigration scheme. Do you think it stems from the affection parents have for their children?
More from dislike of losing their wages.
Still, you know, one might kick against losing one's children for good at 15.
Human nature, eh? Hang on to them and see them rot. Sooner than give them a better chance.
Well, if the scheme's to work, it will cost a lot of money.
And save as much in unemployment dole.
Answers to questions. It's what I came for. But I'm never going to convince the country, am I? Who ever heard of a politician preaching the long view?
Mr. Mont, how nice to meet you at last.
A week later, Michael travelled to Bethnal Green.
Well, it was good of you to write me, Miss Curfew. Most of the letters I've received have less polite things to say.
But I think Sir James is splendid. He's the only one with something positive to say about our children.
I've been to see him, you know. It's quite an event.
If people would only listen to him, we wouldn't have so much to do here.
You really think the parents of these children would accept immigration?
Oh, not without a fight. There's plenty of love for these poor waifs. But we've noticed once the child gets to 10 or 12 and commercial possibilities loom, the fondness assumes another form. When money comes in at the door, Mr. Mont, I'm afraid disinterested love flies out of the window.
Yet Fogartism would turn these children into men of property.
Would that spoil them?
There's something dangerous about silver spoons.
Not as dangerous as the life they'd return to once they're finished here.
You really are an angel.
Oh, that's silly. One got used to doing things in the war, that's all.
I don't suppose you'd have room for two more, would you? Little girls. Their father's a widower. We'd pay for them, of course.
How old are they?
4 and 5. Name of Boddick. I'm trying to set the father up in a scheme of my own at Lippinghall. Poultry farming. Practical foggertism. It's only in the preliminary stages as yet, but we've made some progress. As I see it, Boddick is the key to it all. The only problem is his daughters.
I'd be glad to have them. Now come and see the rest of our flock. They should be trickling in from school any moment.
I believe your brother's going to do a special matinee for you.
Splendid, isn't it? Do you know the Plain Dealer?
Michael returned to South Square in buoyant mood.
You must come and see this place, Fleur. Nora Curfew's absolutely topping.
Oh, I will.
It's fired me to get things moving at Lippinghall. The living quarters are ready, but the rest still buried in a sea of mud.
You haven't forgotten we're dining out, have you? Princess Mary is to be a guest.
Oh,
she's interested in social matters. If the opportunity arises, you must talk to her, Michael.
Hardly the occasion, is it? The room will be full of snobs.
But you must remember not to sit down till she asks you, and to call her Mum. Can you remember that, Michael? I know she'll be impressed by your work with the down and outs.
That's all it is to you, isn't it, Fleur? A subject for conversation.
Mr. and Mrs. Bergfeld, welcome. I'm sorry about the weather. Not the best start to a new life.
I'm doing this for my wife, Mr. Mont. You understand, I am an actor. I have no experience of looking after hens.
Poultry farming, Bergfeld. Think of it as that.
If I had my savings...
Never mind about that. Mrs. Bergfeld, you'll be wanting to see your hut.
Yeah, bitte.
It doesn't look much, I'm afraid, but it is dry and there are plenty of blankets.
I do not see any poultry.
No, Bergfeld, we're not quite ready yet. Mr. Boddick has been cutting timber all week, but the fowl house won't be ready till the new year.
This is the hut?
Don't worry, Mrs. Bergfeld. It looks better on the inside. Oh. You'll find a thermos of hot coffee on the table. I suggest you put some rum in it.
But don't you find it depressing, Mrs. Mont? All that talk of sacrifice.
I hardly think foggertism...
Foggertism? What the devil's that? A new kind of death ray?
You should ask Her Royal Highness, my lord. She's expressed a particular interest in it.
What would my down-and-outs make of this, I wonder? The jewels in this room would pay for their board 100 times over.
I take it, Mr. Forsyte, you've come to offer an apology and a substantial sum in settlement.
Pursuant upon his aim of keeping the case out of court, Soames had made his way to the offices of Settlewhite and Stark.
Well, I'm prepared to offer you £1,000 and a mutual expression of regret. An apology is out of the question.
£1,500, and I might accept, but an apology's essential.
If it comes to court...
Exactly. Society scandals are never edifying.
Very well, then. £1,500. Though, I tell you frankly, I don't believe a jury would award a penny piece.
And the apology?
A formula could be found. We regret that we have said hasty things to each other, something like that, to be signed by both parties.
Very well, Mr. Forsyte. I'll put it to my client. You should hear from us after Christmas.
On the 6th of January, while eating breakfast, Soames received a letter.
Dear sir, in reference to your call of the 17th ultimo, your proposition was duly placed before our client, and we are instructed to say that she will accept the sum of £1,500 and an apology duly signed by your client, copy of which we enclose.
But this was not what we agreed.
Oh, mon Dieu. Whatever is it, Soames?
Read this. Well, I shall withdraw my offer.
£1,500. But this is terrible, Soames. I would not pay her 1,500 pence.
I was trying to keep it out of court.
Why? Fleur has a good head. She will look very pretty in court. You're too squeamish, Soames. You should have this fair woman shadowed.
Shadowed? What do you know about such things?
Taxi!
New theatre, Putney.
Soames did not often visit the theatre, but it was not distraction he was seeking on this bleak January day. He was seeking evidence.
Kind darkness that frees us lovers from scandal and bashfulness.
Olivia in The Plain Dealer. I can see her in court now. Would you say the part was that of a modest woman, Miss Ferrar? And the dark scene? You don't think that calculated to debase the morals of a decent-minded audience? Let's see the red-haired baggage get out of that.
Soames sat back in his seat. He had replied to Settlewhite and Stark, withdrawing his offer in toto. But that was not all he had done. That morning he had visited an office unconnected with the shadowing of Irene and given instructions relating to the activities, past, present and future, of Marjorie Farrar.
Squeamish, am I? We'll see about that.
Kind darkness that frees us lovers from scandal and bashfulness.
I think it went rather well. What is it, Fanny?
Mr. Francis Wilmot's here to see you, miss.
Ask him to wait, will you? I'll be about 20 minutes.
Very well, miss.
Francis, how delicious. Francis.
Marjorie, I didn't hear you.
My dear child.
You can't marry that man. You don't love him. It would be a crime.
Don't be naive, Francis. Not having money is the only crime.
But you can have mine. Everything. How many times do I have to say it?
And how many times do I have to answer? I can't possibly accept.
Then you'll marry McGowan.
Cheer up, Francis. There is another way.
I don't see it.
Fleur's father. He's offered me £1,500 in settlement. It would wipe out most of my pressing debts.
I wish you and Fleur could make it up.
I wonder, should I have quibbled about the apology?
She was mighty nice to me when I first got here. And her father...
Dear Francis, when you look like that, all dark-eyed and romantic, I'm tempted to throw caution to the winds.
You mean... Oh, my darling!
Well, why not? Get away from here. Be your South Carolina maiden.
Oh, my...
But an hour later, with Francis dispatched back to his hotel and barely enough time left to dress for dinner, Marjorie was suddenly reminded of the real world. Amongst a stack of bills and invitations on her dressing table was a communication from the office of Settlewhite and Stark.
Dear madam, we regret to say that Cuthcott, Kingson and Forsyte have refused to give the apology we asked for and have withdrawn their offer in toto.
Marjorie looked at herself in the mirror. Two hard lines had formed on either side of her mouth.
Mr. Wilmot, a word, if you please.
McGowan, as Marjorie told him then.
How can I help you? You are aware of my engagement to Miss Ferrar?
Yes, sir, I was.
If you hadn't been an American, I'd have warned you off long ago. In this country, a gentleman does not pursue an engaged woman.
Oh, surely that is for Miss Ferrar to say.
If you trespass any more...
Are you threatening me?
Look out for yourself. That's all. Don't say you haven't been warned. We won't be disturbed here.
We shouldn't be dining alone at all.
I ordered champagne...
The dinner engagement for which Marjorie had had to banish Francis was with Sir Alexander McGowan. Sensitive to Marjorie's desire to keep their engagement secret, McGowan had booked a private room.
Two fiancés at the same time. That's more than even modernism requires.
The room was designed for intimacy. Above the mantelpiece was a small gilt mirror. Marjorie examined herself curiously.
The perfect mask. Still, Alec will have to be told.
You look ravishing tonight, Marjorie.
Told what, though? That's the thing.
We regret to say that Cuthcott, Kingston and Forsyth...
I'm in a fix now and no mistake.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Huh?
I thought...
Did you see that? That young woman is shadowing me.
By heaven! These people...
I saw her downstairs. She had a good look at me.
Well, that ends it. I shall send our engagement to the papers tomorrow.
You can't marry that man. You don't love him.
But do I really want to marry Francis?
You're right, Alec. How dare that little snob have me followed? She's not going to get away with it.
You mean it? You really will marry me? Thank God.
You think getting me is a cause for gratitude?
I'd go through hell to get you.
My poor, dear boy. We were crazy yesterday. It isn't any good, you know. I can't marry you. I must go through with it with my Scotsman and travel the appointed road.
Mr. Mont, perhaps we could have you in the centre and your, the others on either side of you.
Yes.
Lippinghall. 2 days after Christmas, the press had shown an interest in Michael's poultry farming experiment.
I
hope you'll use that caption I gave you, Foggartism in Action. This is just the publicity we need.
It's not up to me, Mr. Mont. You'll have to speak to my editor.
Birkfeld, do you mind? You and your wife here? Yes? Boddick, this side, I think.
I do not see the purpose of this. There are no hens.
Patience, Birkfeld. All things come to those who wait.
My savings do not come.
I'm sorry, Birkfeld. I realize how difficult this is for you.
It is a question of honor.
Do you think we could manage to look a little happier?
Yes.
If I might inquire, those shots...
Nothing at all to worry about, Birkfeld. My father is teaching the Home Secretary how to shoot.
But the photos that appeared in the newspapers the following day were accompanied by a very different story from the one that Michael had imagined.
Boddick? What's the matter, man? You look as if you've seen a ghost.
You'll have to come, sir. The German's gone and hanged himself.
God, no.
He's not been happy. Not since you got here. That photographer today seemed to be the last straw.
There you are. I hope you've finished with that business now.
Michael took his wife's face in his hands.
Bored. Is that all it is? What is it, Ducky?
Nothing.
Can't you tell me?
How was the funeral?
Wretched. Thank God for Nora Curfew. She's agreed to take in Mrs. Birkfeld as a cook.
Ah, yes. Nora Curfew.
Jealous, Fleur. The notion's absurd.
To live for everybody but oneself. She's a new kind of woman.
I wish you'd tell me what's the matter, old thing.
My dear boy, I've told you nothing.
I don't believe you.
Well, if you must know, I'm fed up with being left out. You treat me as if I were fit for nothing but kit and looking appetizing.
I'm part of her collection, that's what it is. I'm not supposed to have a life of my own.
But what Michael didn't know was that Fleur had that day had an encounter, one that had revived in her an old sense of loss.
Fleur?
Wilfred!
I'm just back. How's Michael?
Very well. He's in Parliament.
Great Scott. And how are you?
As you see. Did you have a good time?
Yes. I'm only perching. The East has got me.
Are you coming to see us?
I think not. The burnt child. You know.
And Fleur had been reminded.
No use to have a heart.
Dear madam, we apologize for troubling you, but are in some perplexity. One of our guests, Mr. Francis Wilmot, has contracted pneumonia.
The letter reached Fleur the following day.
On his condition, we have taken the liberty of examining his effects, where we found your card.
How long has he been ill? I've noticed him looking queer, ma'am, but we didn't know how bad he was until yesterday. The doctor's coming back this afternoon. I heard him say his temperature was 105.
Oh, go and make some lemon tea, weak and hot. Quick!
Yes, ma'am.
Has Marjorie chucked him? Is that what's made him ill? It's all right, Francis. Much pain? What would I have done if Wilfred had got pneumonia?
If you cure me, I'll hate you.
Shh, don't try to talk.
The burnt child, you know.
No, I wouldn't have wanted this.
I'm going to quit.
You mustn't talk like that, Francis. It's not American. Should I send for Anne? What if he dies? Anne Forsythe.
The nurse is here, ma'am. She wondered if you'd help her put on the pneumonia jacket.
Of course, I'd be glad to. I won't tell Anne. There's no time. The crisis will come too quickly. You mustn't worry, Francis. I'm going to come and see you every day. You're going to get better.
There's no need to say anything to Michael. He has his causes. Why shouldn't I have something?
Back at South Square, Fleur sought to calm her troubled nerves.
The engagement is announced of Miss Marjorie Farrar. So, I was right. Well, she'll have to be told, won't she? But I won't see her. An anonymous letter is all she'll get from me.
Fleur had waited 4 days before communicating with her enemy. Her letter, unsigned, had brought Marjorie hurrying to Francis's hotel.
So, it was you wrote to me. The crisis has passed, but he's extremely weak. Will you wait here while I tell him you've come?
Must keep my head. He's not going to die.
She took out a cigarette, placed it between her lips.
That little snob thinks it's my fault.
I'm afraid he doesn't want to see you.
Marjorie took the unlighted cigarette from her lips.
Will he get well? I don't know. I think so. Now. He says he's through with that fool business. Fleur, will you make it up?
No. Then I dare say I shall see you in court.
A week later, Soames drove up to London to see Michael. Fleur had just spent 2 days with him at Mapledurham. Her visit had disturbed him.
Why should I have told him? He doesn't tell me things.
I don't like it, running to a young man's bedside without your husband's knowledge.
I was never alone. I've had a little lamb shadowing me wherever I go.
It was precisely the retaliation Soames had feared.
Who's going to believe she was visiting this young man out of kindness? It's not a motive current in a court of law. We'll have to compromise. Nothing else for it now, especially since that baggage is to be married. The jury won't take kindly to attacks on the future Lady McGowan.
Michael, what's all this about you and Fleur? She says you don't tell her things.
I'd be only too glad to, sir, but I don't think they interest her. She doesn't feel that public things matter.
I meant private.
Oh, there aren't any private things. Does Fleur think there are?
I don't suppose she's told you. She's being shadowed.
Holy Moses.
I thought they might try something.
But there's nothing to... Is there, sir?
Michael's heart misgave him.
Wilfred.
He'd run into him yesterday at the Hotchpotch Club.
Does Fleur know his bag? Have they seen each other?
She's been visiting that young American at the Cosmopolis Hotel. He's had pneumonia. He's out of the wood now, but that's not the point. The point is, what will they make of it in court?
You don't really mean to let it come to that, do you, sir?
I may not be able to prevent it.
What do you want me to do?
Say you knew about her visits to that young man from the start.
Certainly, sir. Husband and wife are one.
And give up all this fussing and pessimism. The state of the country seems to me a curious sort of rival for a woman to have to contend with.
Jealous, Fleur? She doesn't know what it's about.
The case is in the lift, Michael. There is no time for you and Fleur to be strangers. We could be called in a matter of weeks.
The case was put down for the middle of March, and Soames resolved to try one last time to keep it out of court.
Mr. Forsyth?
McGowan?
You asked to see me?
This affair, it can hardly be any more agreeable to you than it is to me.
You are the man who called my fiancée a traitress?
I spoke under provocation.
There's only one way to keep this out of court, Mr. Forsyth. You must instruct your daughter to offer an unqualified apology.
I'm afraid that is out of the question.
Then we've nothing more to say to each other.
Holmes had turned the last stone. He could do no more.
What we have to consider is whether to use the detective's evidence or not. If we do, we shall need to subpoena the hall porter at Mr. Curfew's flat.
That is what we are here to decide, Sir James.
I've a horror of dragging in Miss Farrar's private life. Mr. Curfew's sister is a friend of mine.
I thought we were to turn the whole thing into an indictment of modern morality.
I'm aware of your wishes, Mr. Forsyth, and your excellent work in gathering evidence. But I feel it my duty to point out to you that a cross-examination based on what books the plaintiff had read and what plays she's performed in could prove dangerously inconclusive. We'd better go for the gloves.
If you use the detective's evidence, my daughter will be called. I won't have that at any cost.
Do you want me to win the case?
We must win.
Then we must trust to your books and plays.
It was a case no one wanted, yet everyone was sworn to fight. Only one hope remained. The Marquis of Shropshire might be persuaded to prevail upon his granddaughter.
We're at a deadlock, sir. If anything's to be done to save a scandal, it must be done now.
The Marquis had a scheme for electrifying the country. He was as keen to win Michael's support as Michael was to secure his.
I dislike publicity. It plays into the hands of those who would see our class banished from the land.
We're all anxious to avoid publicity, sir.
If only my granddaughter would interest herself in something sensible.
The electrification of the country?
I trust you're going to support Parsham's bill, young man.
I shall be giving it most careful attention.
A libel case, you say?
We've exhausted all other channels, I'm afraid.
Then I think it's time I invited my granddaughter to breakfast. Well, Marjorie, what's all this I hear about a libel?
It wouldn't interest you, dear.
Do you want to wash your linen in public?
I don't have any choice.
Aren't you the plaintiff?
Yes.
We do still stand for something, Marjorie. It would be a mistake to forget that.
Grandfather, I tried to make it up with her, but she refused. What do you expect me to do?
You're looking lovely tonight, Marjorie.
That evening, Marjorie joined Sir Alexander McGowan in his box at the theatre.
Oh, it's all very well for Grandfather, but what does he expect me to stand for? It's not as if I have a handle to my name. Alec, are you sure you don't mind about this case? It's bound to make the most frightful stink.
There are some things one can't sit down under, Marjorie. Besides, you've nothing to reproach yourself with. It's the conduct of the other side that's been infamous.
Never to be stuffy. Never to be dull. That's my faith. Are you sure you know what I'm really like, Alec?
Marjorie, I believe in you more than you believe in yourself.
Oh, here you are.
Have you come to cheer me up?
You've nothing to worry about. You won't be called. And how are you today, young man?
I should wear something sober and a small hat. Do you want your mother there?
I don't mind.
The great thing is to keep still and pay no attention to anything.
Not even the jury?
Especially not them.
Well, my darling, what do you think about it all? Your mother in court.
You and Michael, you've got over that not telling each other things, have you?
Yes.
He's very fond of you, Fleur.
I don't really care about the case anymore. The harm's done. All I want now is to see her have a bad time.
In episode 13 of the Foresight Chronicles, Galsworthy was Dirk Bogart, Soames, Alan Howard, Fleur, Amanda Redman, Michael Mont, Gary Bond. Belinda Lang played Marjorie Farrar, Simon Treves, Francis Wilmot, Philip Sully, Wilfred Desert, Stuart McGugan, Sir Alexander McGowan, Jack May, the Marquis of Shropshire, and Paul Damon, Sir Lawrence Mont. Mr. Settlewhite was played by David King, Butterfield by Nicholas Gilbrook, Sir James Foggett, Michael Kilgariff, Bergfeld, Benon Wukwe, Mrs. Bergfeld, Tara Dominic, and Boddick, David Bannerman. James Green played Lord Charles Farrar, Brian Miller, the editor, and Stephen Garlick, Bickett. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Anthony Cornish.